It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life. It's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good.
Greetings and welcome, everybody, to the Monday Golf Lifestyle Show. That's right. The Lifestyle Show is on and now for you. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Ray Adams with you all hour after all of these 26 long years. Wow. I love it. It feels like just yesterday that this show was added a year after my Great American Golf Show. And that one is now... I believe we've begun our 27th year. And I'm told, as far as golf radio shows, that this is the, we're confirming it. It's not for sure. The Great American Golf may be the longest running golf radio show in the United States that's at the same time and the same day. Other shows, a couple only, have been running longer, but they've skipped around channels, they've skipped around times, days. My researcher believes, and he's the one that told me, I didn't even think about it. So congratulations to all the shows that cover golf and all of those correspondents and hosts. And thank you, listeners and sponsors, for helping me to be on all these years too. And only with great co-hosts like Craig Renshaw and Dr. Bob Denny, who are joining me right this second. Now, I've got to get this started because we are a golf talk show by congratulating the Knicks. The New York Knicks are the NBA champions over the San Antonio Spurs. And of course, I'm a little biased because I was pulling for the Spurs because my granddaughter is a dancer for the Spurs. She's one of the dancers. And we love seeing Grace, and we enjoyed watching the Spurs through the playoffs and the finals. However, the Knicks are the champions. We give them big, big congrats. They absolutely blew out the Spurs 4-1. And oh, well, Bob, you're our resident basketball analyst. What do you have to say?
I expected...
See how nice I was.
Yes, yes. I understand your affiliation with family when it comes to the Spurs.
Yeah.
I liked the Spurs ever since Greg Popovich was a coach. But this group will never learn how to close a game until they actually comes up and hits you in the face, and that it happened at the highest level, which was the NBA Finals. You have to close a game. You have to close a game, and you don't go down in the one Madison Square Garden with a big lead like that and keep throwing up three pointers and expect to win the game. Pointers. There's only 33% as average of making them. So they had seven straight possessions, Ray. That's my final word on it. Seven straight possessions. They threw it away by that, and I blame coaching for that.
Uh-huh.
3-point shots. That's not, and they did it early in the shot clock. So yep. as a person who watches basketball all my life, covered it for 30 years, way before I knew Ray Adams and Craig Renshaw, I've learned to watch how people can come back in basketball games. That was the prime example, and it was historic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Craig, what Dr. Bob just said was very, very timely, because he said you have to be able to close a game. Now, I would have thought that the five players from the Spurs the other night could have gone over to the bench and laid down with a little pillow and had a nice little nappy-o while the next five players went out on the court with a 29-point lead. They don't know how to close a game, do they, Craig?
Well, you're probably right. And it's definitely coaching. It's, I mean, we see it on golf too. We have forgotten how to teach people what is the winning formula when they're down that much, and that it's a clock issue, and that scoring more points isn't really that big a deal. And you see it all the time in football, baseball, hockey, all these sports. The game has changed. We hear that all the time, which is true. But sometimes the old ways do it. And it's funny that Dr. Bob said what he did about those games, because that's from the highlights that I saw. It's the thing that made me want to throw something at my TV. It's like, how can you throw up a three-pointer in 4 seconds when you're winning by 29 points? It's like, run the thing down to 4 seconds, 2 seconds, and throw up the same three-pointer. It's
Yeah,
like,
what are
that's how
they
you're going to win.
thinking? What are they thinking?
Well,
And
because they don't think, because they have been taught that everything they do and that decision is good. That's what they do. And so you can't do that. It's like, well, sometimes you need to know how to other ways to be able to win. Or as we say in golf business, you need more tools in your toolbox than one shot. And a lot of these players and a lot of these ways that players are being taught nowadays is one way and one way only.
well, this
And Craig, as we look at basketball, we look back to golf. How do you hold a
exactly.
three-stroke lead coming down the stretch? And hold mentally, how do you handle that?
Well, when you said they have to learn how to close a game, Bob, this goes for golf. And I want both of you to weigh in because we've talked about this forever and ever and ever with players. You've got to learn how to close. You've got to learn how to win. And so many players, like you say, Bob, have come down the stretch leading or in the mix to be able to win, and they just completely choke out. And we've spoken about this over and over again, Craig. First, what about learning to close in professional golf? And can we translate that to our listeners? Who are recreational amateur players? How do they close on a Saturday match or a round of golf with their friends where they may have something on the line? Start with the pros. Take us across, Craig, to the listeners.
Well, the pros, they got to do with what their strong point is, and the amateurs too. But the pros have a lot more advantage because they know how to hit a lot of different shots. But we go back to when Phil blew the open, and something that we've said a long, long time is, you can hit 5 iron, 5 iron, 5 iron, and you have to understand what your skills are and what you can do, what you can't do, and understand that. And sometimes the emotional part of it gets to be overwhelming. And the amateurs, you definitely got to play to your strong part as much as you can. And you got to be able to think pretty clearly. And unfortunately, with most amateurs, at least the ones that I see a lot of times, is they just don't think very clearly and they're poor decision makers. But in my opinion, a lot of people are poor decision makers. That's a skill. You have to be able to do certain things and be able to analyze stuff. And that's what people don't do anymore. It's just react and, oh, I reacted this way, so that's got to be good. No, and that's what people don't want to
Bob,
do.
closing in golf. Unbelievable how we've talked over the years, so many different tour players. And with Phil, you mentioned Phil, Craig, and the US Open. Some people say, well, like Greg Norman, he was snake bit as far as the US Open goes. I don't think so. I think there were a lot of bad decisions over the years. Am I remembering correctly, Bob and Craig, where one US Open, Phil did not have a driver in the bag, or did he have two drivers? It was one or the other, and I don't remember, Bob.
He had a didn't have a driver, but he had something with a different face on it, which like a hybrid at the time.
This was years ago. And then, of course, we saw him blow it on the final tees, and
Yeah.
I mean
He's
just
the modern version of blowing something. Sam Snead blew the US Open four or five times.
Okay, well, congratulations to the Knicks. We've got to learn how to close a game, and we need to learn how to close in golf. And that's not just for the tour players. That's for you and me, folks out there, us, we recreational amateur players.
Another team
Let's.
closed last night, Ray.
Yes, that was a
Oh.
big one too. I was going to say the same thing.
Go
They
ahead.
closed Carolina Hurricanes. They closed the Stanley Cup in style.
Well, congratulations on the Stanley Cup. We love hockey. I did not have it in my notes to mention that, but that's okay. We should. And a big congrats, Stanley Cup champions. There's another one. I'll tell you what, winning the Stanley Cup is, well, they're all difficult from, the World Series to the NBA Finals to the Stanley Cup. They are all terribly difficult to do because it means consistency, constant winning, and figuring how to close, especially at the moments when you very much need to. You've got to do it when it's called for. All right. What about that leaderboard in golf, Craig?
It was nice to see. It was a good leaderboard, and it was nice to see Bud Cauley finally win after what was it, Dr. Bob, 340 starts or something like that. But
230, just 239.
Bud Cauley beat Fitzpatrick and Victor Hovland, which is nice to see because it. I think those are two guys that are getting primed for this week. They're very good ball strikers, and I think it leads them, which being precise, which was nice to see that they are probably trending in the right direction for this week.
Well, my comment, and you guys, you two can come after me here, is I watched the tournament. I love the tournament. That golf course is beautiful. The weather was apparently heavenly, but it looked like it was a little nippy at times because they all had on long sleeve outerwear. And I'm jealous because it's going to be 109 here in Phoenix today. Don't even, we can't even talk about it. My hair is on fire and will be until Halloween. But anyway, Bud Cauley wins by a stroke. He had a four shot lead, or did, oh, that's right. I'm sorry. He did win by two. That's right. He did. But anyway, he sure gave us a little run for the money. He certainly gave us some excitement, Bob.
Yes. I would say anybody that hasn't won in before would always have a little bit of have to get some breaks. And he got a great break on 12 when he holed out a beautiful hole out from the front rough in front of the green. And at 16, the ball landed in a spot where it was not in pretty good shape in a sort of cushy lie after it bounced through the spectators. So it didn't go in the woods on 16. He bogeys 17 and he gets out of a horrible lie above
Right.
a bunker on 18,
Yes.
gets a par out of that one. So he earned it very well, and it was riveting at the end, yes. But if there's ever pulling for a guy to win one, that's one guy to pull for after what he's been through.
Well, absolutely. And Fitzpatrick has had and does have and will continue to have his glory. Victor Hovland, nice to see him come back from, the dungeon somewhere. And play some great golf because he's one of my favorites too. Hawley wins 1 point, or Cauley wins 1.76 million. He gets 500 FedEx Cup points. And listen to this: he shoots 69, 63, 66, and a 65. But again, he scared me a little bit because when he blew that driver, Craig, way out to the right into the deep rough, inches from the bunker. And then he had that awkward stance. He takes out, I think they said, a gap wedge, aims it perfectly, positions his club, and strikes the ball perfectly out right where he should have gone. And then he proceeds, because of the slope, to fall flat on his face into the bunker. The poor guy. But it happens. That's how awkward his lie was and his stance. So, miracle shot. And it had to be, or I don't know that he would have won. Anyway, he comes out of there. He's got 119 yards, and he throws up the pitch shot, or whatever it was, the wedge shot. I don't know what that was, 30 some feet, lags it up for an easy little tap in par. And I thoroughly enjoyed watching it, but it was white knuckle, Craig.
Yeah, I mean, and it's those guys. It's a par five. Par fives are, I mean, when you see players of that caliber, they want to just shoot themselves when they make bogeys on par five. So if they have to take three shots to get there, it's pretty easy. They are very skilled at getting up and down from 25 to 35 feet, which to me is the underrated skill that we don't say it enough on television coverage, is to put people at 30, 35, 40 feet and watch them two putt all day long. That can be as better of a skill than hitting something from 235, 40 yards. I mean, it's just amazing. You can sit there and watch bad golfers all day and put them at 30 feet and watch them three putt 75, 80% of the time. And you go, that's a skill that's not talked about versus driving at 330 yards. That is a skill that those guys and girls have that is absolutely so under talked about. And it is amazing under pressure when your nerves are going crazy to be making something like that is just amazing.
Well, in
Appreciate it.
1971, Bob, you're our historian. I believe I'm correct when I say 1971. The Merry Mechs, Super Mechs, by the name of Lee Trevino, wins the U.S. Open. He then, right after that, Open was after the US Open forever, and wins the Canadian Open. And then he turns around right after that and he wins the British Open Championship. Wow, what a summer of championship golf for Lee Trevino. And well, no wonder, considered one of the greatest shot makers in the game and one of the greatest clutch putters in history. We all love Lee Trevino. What a game. What a summer for Lee, Bob.
Yes, your audio was going in and out, so I'm catching up where you were. And
Uh-oh.
it was Lee Trevino in 1971 and
Yes.
Tiger Woods in 2000 that had the Triple Crown of which is unique. And that's the very special part about it, is they were able to pull that off. And I remember Lee so vividly because I was following his career going against Jack Nicklaus, and Jack never won a Canadian Open. And Lee just, just followed up, and when he gets in the momentum, he's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. So congrats to again, Bud Cauley. All right, what are the ladies up to out there? I saw a little ladies golf happening, and then I saw some young ladies playing what they call the Curtis Cup. Now, folks, by now, after all these hundreds of years on the air, you know that I'll say stuff, comments and what have you, to stir up a discussion where I already know the answer, or I'll play dumb like I don't. In order to get the discussion moving along or stirred up. Little fire out there, little heat out there for some entertainment for you. I know what the Curtis Cup is, but Bob, tell everybody, what is the Curtis Cup? Let's start there. And let's talk about these collegiates who I loved watching it. It was very compelling.
Yeah. First, for the Curtis Cup, the United States won, and they keep winning all the time. And it's the amateur match play championship at the highest level for the best women amateurs in the country. And it began way back in 1932. This year they held it at Bel Air Country Club, which is your is not your mom and pop course. That is one of the most elite places in the world, in the United States, I should say. And they played very well there, obviously, winning 13-7. So you're going to hear a lot of those names in the future. The captain for Great Britain and Ireland was a woman who knows so the Katrina Matthew, who really knows the Solheim Cup and has been so successful in that. And the United States captain was Megan Stassi. But you'll see that a lot of those ladies that are participating will have a nice chance to probably go on to professional golf.
Very good. What about the LPGA Tour, Bob?
Very quickly, that was in Midland, Michigan. It was the only team event they have. And Gina Kim and Yana Wilson, two relatively unsung people we don't hear about from the United States, win it in Midland. And Nelly Korda and her German companion at the time, excuse me, for the weekend was Olivia Cowan. They tied for 17th. Not a very good third round for them.
All right,
I had another. I don't want to interrupt you, Ray,
I
but
have a nugget.
I hope we get to my biggest story of the week. Personally, was Zach Johnson winning the Principal Charity Classic on the PGA Champions.
Well, I was going to let Craig take over the
I'm
Champions
sorry.
Tour.
I'm
Well,
sorry.
no, no,
No,
no,
no,
no,
no. Go ahead,
no,
Dr. Bob.
no,
Go
Bob,
for
you do it. I was just going to go to Craig and let him do one,
Go for
but
it.
go ahead and
Yeah.
do it. We love Zach Johnson. He's a Iowa guy playing at Wakanda in Des Moines, Iowa.
His debut there.
And I
Yeah.
listened to a couple of his interviews.
Right.
Go ahead, Bob, take off.
Oh, well, Craig, I think you agree with me that Zach looks very comfortable at 50 years old right now playing on that tour. 17 under, 67 in the final. He had a couple bogeys on the front side, comes back and plays Zach back to back to back. He just knows how to turn up the gas. He is the closer. He is a closer when he gets in that mode. And he beat Richard Green by 4 strokes, and Retief Goosen tied for second. So it's great to see Zach, and that was his debut in this in his home state, 2 hours from where he was born.
You're listening to Craig Renshaw. He's our notable instructor from the PGA of America. More about that in a few minutes, by the way, so don't move, folks. You're going to love it. And then Dr. Bob Denny, he is our PGA of America historian emeritus, the best in the country. And we're so glad and happy he's with us, as always. And these segments are being brought to you by Tour Edge Golf at touredge.com. You've got to check out touredge.com, folks, for the new putter. What innovation and technology! We'll be talking more about that, as well as Squares golf shoes. All summer set up, ready to go. And all of these and many new companies will be joining me for my big, big, big email send to all of you. That's coming up around the 1st of July in a couple of weeks, where we're going to celebrate America's 250th birthday. And we're going to put out the America's 250th birthday golf gift guide. And I want you to get it. I want you to be able to see it, shop it, do whatever you want to do with it. The opening of it, when you get it, you're going to love it. A lot of color, a lot of America's birthday, the flags, and all this sort of thing. It's very cool, and we're working on it right now. Would you like to get all of my emails? Would you like to get my holiday gift guides? Would you like to get this one, America's upcoming 250th? Well, you can do that by writing to me, golfadams@msn.com. Okay, this is going to be fun. Craig, you just passed a lifetime achievement milestone. Not many people do this in their career, and I don't care what your career is, but you have just surpassed 25 years as a PGA professional. Now,
Correct.
that means you became a PGA professional about a year and a half or so. We're still trying to figure this out, research being done. But you were within a year, or call it two, of me beginning Great American Golf Radio Show. So, We kind of started right there. For me, it was a second career after corporate and teaching at the university at quite a young age. I sort of fell into broadcasting. You studied hard. You were a stick. You did your players. I don't even know what all you had to do in those days to become a PGA professional compared to what you have to do today. Let's start there. Tell us that. What did you have to do then compared to what do they do now?
Well, I don't know exactly all they do now. I have a few kids that are working in the business that they're starting to go through work. It's similar. I had to take my playability test, and then I had what we called three business schools that I had to go to. And I did one in Kansas City, I did one in Orlando, and one in Irvine, California, over a significant period of time, and then came back to Phoenix and was. I guess initiated, I guess, or completed everything, and so was given membership to the PGA in the Southwest section back in 2001.
So that's what you had to do to qualify. Now, I do know one thing that I was told in Frisco, Bob, about becoming a PGA professional. And I believe this started last year. I believe that's what they told me. I had a private tour by a very, very, call it high-ranking professional person at the PGA of America. My group and I had a private tour of Frisco. And I was told that going forward, and I don't know when it began, that all PGA of America professionals were required to go to Frisco, to the home of the PGA of America in the Dallas, Texas area, to that facility. And that is where they finished out or studied for and fulfilled requirements to be a PGA professional. Is that right, Bob?
That sounds about right.
You got to go to Frisco these days, Craig.
Yeah, give us another decade, we'll go somewhere else again. So.
Well, I don't know. They're going to have to build another, I don't know how many. Tens or hundreds of millions that all cost with Omni Resort and all that. Okay. So to become a PGA professional is an arduous task. It takes a long time. You don't just do this in a couple months. And you have to be able to play the game extremely well. You have to be able to study and pass certain milestones in your study. And then you have to, I'm sure, do a lot of other things where you finally then become a PGA professional. I have noticed several new PGA professionals who post on their LinkedIn or wherever they post on their social media that I'm proud to say and humbled to say that I have become a PGA professional. And I'm over the years have always liked that for them. I've always, liked it on social media. And I've also noted that over the last several years, who was the former president of the PGA of America, Don Wray, would always go in and make a comment. I have not seen any comments from people over at the PGA of America. Maybe I missed it. But certainly the current acting president or whatever they're doing, I don't know that I've seen it. And again, maybe I've missed it. But it's always important. From your organization, Craig, I don't care if you become a plumber and you're in the National Association of Plumbers or heating, ventilation, and air conditioning trade, group or Writers of America, the Golf Writers of America. I don't care, real estate, whatever your career is, doctor, lawyer, butcher, baker, candlestick maker, whatever your career is, it's always great to achieve that level of professionalism to be able to practice your career, do your career, and then have others, recognize you for that at the beginning and then along the way, and certainly like you at the end. 25 years, Craig, what have you learned about the game? of golf and teaching the game to your students over 25 years?
Oh, golly. That's a good question, right? The teaching has changed a whole lot. Things that we talk about with students are completely different in a lot of ways than what we started with. Some of that is my exposure to the game and how I've gotten better. You hear it from a lot of teachers in any area, whether it's golf or baseball. Anybody that you've taught, you probably owe them money back because the way you teach now versus where you did 25, 30 years ago is completely different and better. So anybody that took a lesson there, they probably need a refund or something. And that's absolutely true. Whether they improved or not. But I guess in certain ways is that golf, and even though I've had a career that has been largely based privately, I have worked publicly, I've worked in resorts and stuff like that. Golf for the ways that we talk about is only for the well-to-do. You see all kinds in golf, and that to me is probably thinking back on it now is, I mean, you see people on the golf course with. They'll tell you that they bought these clubs in this bag for $25, and you go, "Oh yeah, I can see that." And then they'll tell you, "I haven't bought a golf ball in 35 years," and you go, "Yeah, I can see that." But at the end of the day, they're out there having fun, and they're out there enjoying themselves. Sometimes it's hard to tell they're enjoying themselves or having fun because of how they're playing or whatever. But it is amazing how different people are. And yet they all find this game entertaining and enjoy it. And yet this sport brings them together. So that's what I've learned.
Craig, they sent you a little commemorative box, didn't they?
It
At
was.
your now, when you celebrate your 25th anniversary as a PGA professional, does that automatically make you what is called a lifetime member of the PGA of America or a lifer?
No,
I know
it
you know
means.
the answer, Bob. Bob is over there shaking his head, Craig. Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, no, no,
No, it's
no.
fine.
It makes me a quarter century member, which is I in certain ways that's what I've been waiting for. That was a big deal to me. I've told a lot of people this story. When I first went to business school, I went to Kansas City, Missouri the first time, drove from St. Louis to Kansas City, sat in this great big hotel room. At the Hallmark Center, and there were probably 500, 600 golf professionals, all were similar areas. We're starting to go through there. And I can't tell you for sure. You mentioned it on the lead-in part of it. I would love to know how many people become quarter century members. I would love to know how many people of that class has become. I know there was one person at my table, Jerry King. He is still in the business. He's an accomplished teacher also. There's just not many that get that far. And in today's day and age, you're right. Not many people hang around a job for 25 years like that.
No,
So,
they don't.
that has been a personal sense of pride to, I've hung around, and as my mom said before she passed, I've never had a real job. And in certain ways, that's true. I'm very thankful that I've lived in, how many different states. Or visited how many different states, and it's all because of golf.
Yes.
And that amazes me when I think back to where I thought I might be going 40 years ago, and I go, good golly, I'm nowhere near what I would have thought. I mean, just a totally different track, right? And I'm very happy with that.
Well, now, how do you become a lifetime member? How do you become what they call a lifer? What happens?
Well, I'm not totally sure on that one. Bob may know this exactly, but I believe you have to spend 20 years, and then I believe I can fill out a form, and that gets me there. And there's
Well,
two
you're long
different types of
there.
lifetime members.
Oh,
Yes, but
okay.
you
Go
don't
ahead.
have to do it. You don't have to go
Go
to the
ahead.
lifetime membership.
Well, if you become a lifer, does that mean you don't have to pay dues anymore?
Yes, in certain, I believe there's two different classifications. Yes.
Well, that's a pretty good. Why don't you want to? Why haven't you been able to fill out that form or gotten to it yet?
Because I'm lazy.
Oh, holy mackerel, Andy. He admits it.
Oh, yeah.
No, you're not lazy. All right, Bob. What about this? I'm going to give you a word here because I know that over the years, Craig, you're going to have to tell us about all of the technology that you've seen and that you've used and that has passed through your hands in order to teach players and how that technology is actually dominating teaching these days. Let me give you a 10 seconds answer. Craig.
Well, I remember I was in New Hampshire and we got a launch monitor to help fit Cobra golf clubs. And now launch monitors are just a common thing that everybody has, and they can go from anywhere from $30,000 down to about a couple hundred dollars. That's part of what technology is changing. Like I said, things that we talk about with our students is completely different, and it just amazes me.
So, Bob, being a lifetime member of the PGA is a big deal. I know you know many of them. And of course, the 25-year, mark, anniversary mark is a big deal. But from what you've noticed on your side of the ranch at the PGA of America for all these years, what about being a lifetime member? What about being a lifer?
It's a never-ending love affair with the game, and those that are physically able are most life member actives. They are available to members who have completed 20 years in an active classification, and they continue to work. And that's the important thing to see that. I think it's always important to stay active. And one of my dear friends, Gus Andreone, was giving tips up to age 102. And
That's awesome.
he died at 107,
That's awesome.
but he was in Sarasota at Palm Air Country Club, and he is a wonderful guy. And he said the same things that we were trying to say here: stay active, stay interested. It'll extend your life.
Right, on that great note, we're going to head out to a break. Folks, these are sponsors that care about you. They've got great products. And of course, they would love for you to listen and then go to their website and purchase one of their products. And you may very well want to do that because you're going to notice that these products interest you and they're of help to you and your game in order to enjoy and have more fun. So have a listen to some great sponsors, and Bob and Craig and I will return in just a moment.
Introducing the revolutionary T-Clip, a 4-in-1 magnetic T-holder, an alignment tool, a divot repair tool, and a ball marker. It's handcrafted to provide effortless access to your golf tees, all without digging in your pockets. Visit our website, theTClip.com, to experience the difference and order yours now. Straight Line Golf brings you the club alignment system that will change the way you play golf while reducing your strokes on the course. How many times have you bought a golf fade that fell short of success? Our system is changing the way golf is played, whether novice or professional. Our patented club alignment system is a visual aid comprised of decals attached to your club shaft and can be left on the shaft while you play. This USGA permitted system will help with great repeatable shots for a great alignment and swing. Visit StraightLine.golf for more details.
Legacy Golf Resort in Phoenix. Experience the thrill of our championship golf course. Dine in the full-service restaurant at the Trails End Bar and Grill. Our golf performance center is equipped with cutting-edge technology, helping you refine your game and unlock your full potential. We're not just a golf destination. We're also the perfect backdrop for your dream wedding at our gorgeous award-winning Sierra Vista venue. Whether it's a birdie on the course or the perfect I do under the desert sun, Legacy Golf Resort creates memories that last a lifetime.
It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. So good.
Greetings and welcome back to the Monday Golf Lifestyle Show, everybody. Right here, Ray Adams, the Lifestyle Show, is right back on with Dr. Bob Denny from the PGA of America as their historian emeritus when we went out to break, and Craig Renshaw. We were talking to Craig about being a lifetime member of the PGA, receiving his medal or whatever they give you, a pin or what have you, for being passing his 25th anniversary as a member of the PGA of America. Craig, I thought they might could have done a little bit better job, though, on that. On that, what did they give you, a pin or a medal or what?
It is a jacket pin, yes.
Well, are you going to wear your pin now from now on?
Yeah, if I ever have to wear a jacket, I will. It's just one of those things that, you know, many, many years ago, as we were talking about how it's changed and how teaching has changed and things that I'm doing differently, every time you had to do something in the PGA, you had to wear a sports coat. And that, I don't want to say it had more value then, but in certain ways it had more value then. I mean, it's almost like cufflinks. Now you only wear cufflinks at certain times. Now you just wear, you know, a dress shirt or whatever.
Yeah.
You just don't wear a coat very much anymore. So, you know, I will definitely wear it with pride. There is no doubt about it.
Well, good for you. We congratulate you on that. And hey, why can't you put it on your on your collar like a lot of people do?
Oh,
different.
Yeah, because I could. Sure.
Yeah. No doubt. Yeah. I think when you're teaching or when you're working in golf, wherever you go, whatever you're doing, if you're working as the PGA professional you are, put that pin on your collar. Right,
sure.
Bob?
Good point.
Yes. I think it's a big deal. All right. We have talked about some great things already, but I also want to mention, as a PGA professional and growing up under the tutelage of a PGA professional father, there's a guy by the name of Justin Thomas, and we certainly like Justin. He's one of our favorites out there, certainly one of mine. But Justin had a little bit of something to say to Brian Rolapp. Did you get that article that I sent over to you guys?
Yes.
He put it on his official X account in response to a post about the pressure associated with making halfway cuts. And he said he made it clear, the article says, that grinding to make the cut can feel like an even more highly pressurized situation than actually contending to win golf tournaments at times. Quote, "I'll always argue the pressure of making a cut can feel like more pressure than trying to win a tournament," end quote, said Thomas. It's a completely different feeling, but it's real. Bob?
I like it. Everything he says there. Golf's a meritocracy. You have to earn your way in. And any derivation from that spoils to me the point of fighting and grinding and making it a personal battle to get to the top. It's a personal effort to get there, and I agree with what Justin's saying. You have to consider that. You just can't be given it and have a free ride and, oh, you don't, there's no cut this week, blah blah blah. Well, that doesn't show me much. Those people that are fighting hard to make it, that makes golf far more interesting.
Well, Craig, the article goes on, if you were able to read it, and it says, "And Brian Rolapp must ensure that all signature events, the big ones, moving forward, have halfway cuts and bigger fields." Because so many players are being, well, cut out of making a living. What about halfway cuts in the signature events, Craig?
Well, I think people would say I've been quite easy on Liv and quite hard on the PGA Tour. And I don't think I've been easy on Liv, but I have been quite hard on the PGA Tour with the decisions that in golf that we've done over the last 4 years or 5 years now, whatever it is. But I think it continues to show that the PGA Tour is making these decisions. And he's only one person, so maybe this is wrong for me to say it this way, but this way I'm going to say it. I don't think they're still listening to membership. I really don't, which is why Liv people went to Liv, because They were tired of being unlistened to and tired of thinking like their opinion didn't matter.
Yep.
And some of those guys were really big players in golf. And we wouldn't be in this situation if they could adapt a little bit and say, let's do this and do this. Well, we were told a few years ago that to match these purses and everything, we were gonna go to no cut. And this is what the membership wanted. Well, you got a top 10 player with 16 wins to his credit, and he's telling you the exact opposite and what a lot of players will tell you. And yet they did the exact opposite here. They added more signature events and more. And it just seems like this is what they do, is they just don't listen to what the players are telling them.
Why?
Because they don't care. They want, as long as they get their number. Most of the people they're listening to are not golfers, have nothing to do with it in there. And they're just saying, well, we need to get television revenue. And we need any, as I've said for many years now, the only way the PGA Tour grades the season is whether or not the purse goes up at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
If the purses go up, hey, in 2026, we had $200 million in prize money. In 2027, we have $200 million and 10 cents. It was a positive year next year. That's a good year. That's the only decision they make it by.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bob?
Mm-hmm. I just think I've found a way to look on other events when some of the PGA Tour events are on television, to be honest with you. I'm not watching every one of them anymore. And that it relates back to what Craig just said. It's lost a lot of interest to me because of the attraction of and the just the storyline, but also just that it's just seems like it's a blah. You don't hear any buzz around it, and that's more than just dollars and cents. It's interest among inside the ropes too. But it's also who can afford to go to these events, who mm-hmm. can afford to sponsor these events.
Well, guys,
yeah.
I have a friend of mine that will tell you the exact same thing. And he has a theory, and I would like to have both of you think about it. But he will tell you part of the reason that you don't watch now is because the golf courses are boring, and the golf courses have no feel, and the club has no feel. So what's the difference between – do you really feel like even though they've made Southwinds a featured event, is that golf course really exciting? Do you like watching that golf course?
Uh-huh.
And so the golf course is what drives it. That's mm-hmm. his theory. That's his theory. The golf course drives it. You know, they're going back to Doral. Why? Because for many years, Doral was the blue monster. And the golf course drew it. The golf course drew it. The fields are going to change, but it's the golf course. Why do we go back to Shinnecock? Why are we going back to Wingfoot? Pebble Beach? It's the golf course, not sure. the field. And yet they've gotten rid of all the good golf courses.
It's a good point. Good point.
Craig, you are a neighbor of Rory McIlroy in Jupiter, Florida.
Yeah, we hang out all the time. Sure.
I'm sure that you do.
Well, he's moving back to London now.
Well, that is the article that I read, and I think you two read it. What I was interested about this article that I read that came out of, Microsoft News is that it was the reason why he's moving back to London. And I want to pick that out. So after several years in Florida, the article says Rory and his family have finally settled in England. He's moved to the London area where he's living right next door to the famous Wentworth Golf Club. Wonder what it costs to play there. The world number two confirmed this week he will now be spending more time at his new property in Surrey, marking the beginning of a new chapter in his personal life. Now, he's been talking, especially since the Masters win, about his personal life and how he wants to go about living it and playing his golf and some of the details, Bob. So from County Down in Northern Ireland, which is, by the way, where all my family on one side is from, County Down, Rory, like I said, started talking about this quite a while, and he's done extensive renovations, the article says. Who knows how many millions of dollars went into putting that house and transforming the property into what he and his wife Erica and their daughter Poppy, I love that cute name, would want. Now, part of the article talks about the motivation to do this. And it says that the move was reportedly motivated in part by Erica's desire to escape the stifling, constant heat of Florida and to offer their family a more balanced lifestyle. Is it not balanced in Florida, in Jupiter, Craig?
Well, that's the phrase they want to use. I think it's balanced.
Okay.
I believe he's a part owner of an F1 team now. I think a lot of his business now is being done more in Europe. They'll scale down from, instead of 5 acres here, they'll scale down to a 1 acre thing and still have something here. I don't think they'll get rid of Florida. I think they'll just move their
No, it
stuff
says
over.
he's
I think his
keeping,
business.
yeah, it says he's keeping their Jupiter home.
Yeah, they're busy. His business interests have definitely gone more European and more Middle Eastern, I believe. So as a result of that, I think he needs to be over there more often, and it's easier to do that. So more power to him.
Yeah, but what about the stifling heat that his wife says that she wanted to escape, Bob? Now, both of you live in Florida. I've been there. I've been there at different times, and so I've experienced the humidity. But if you're around the ocean anywhere, it's fine. Go ahead, Bob, take off. Is the heat stifling?
I've lived here now 34 years, and I have never had what I call the humidity I used to have in the Midwest, to be honest with you, in the summer. I've had breezes come through or off the ocean. I live 9 miles from the ocean, and my body's just adapted to it.
Is it stifling heat? Correct.
No, but maybe she's one of those people that it just messes up her hair and she doesn't like it that much.
My wife loves to go to San Diego, and she was just in Florida near Miami visiting her sister for 8 days. She loves the humidity for her hair. It makes her hair just, she says, bigger, softer, nicer, and it is beautiful, I must say. Wherever she is, but
Okay.
I thought women love the humidity. Okay. And then there's one more I want to mention about the article. Their new residence is located in a particularly sought after area, home to several prominent figures. Now, this is the kind of wealth we're talking about. Elton John lives nearby, Cliff Richard. But above all of the others, the presence of the Sultan of Brunei, who is worth 22.3 billion pounds, underscores the extremely prestigious nature of the area. What about that, Bob?
That's quite the neighborhood. I will tell you, living in the UK isn't all roses when it comes to their healthcare system, and you have to pay up front. The Medicare doesn't exist over there. You have to, for the average patient. So they've got all the resources in the world to enjoy the wonderful world of London and its Surrey and all the great places. I love Surrey. I bet I played Wentworth. It is fun, but. There are, it's not all roses for every other situation as you move into the tax burdens, all kinds of things, prices, you name it. It's not cheap in London area.
Well, and the article also includes, and then we're going to move on. According to the Daily Mail, what's the Daily Mail, Bob?
Tabloid.
Okay. The Northern Irish champion, originally from County Down, remained, quote, angry and hurt, end quote, by the insults and hostile behavior his family endured during the Ryder Cup held in Bethpage, New York. Now, this was last fall. We've talked about it. I was there. I covered it. We've talked about it over again and over again and on again and over again. And I guess we'll continue to talk about it here and there forever. But here it comes up again. that this was one of the reasons. There were, I'm sure, many, but one of them was Rory is still angry and hurt. Bob?
Well, I have, to be honest with you, I really have no more comments about that because I think it's over and done with,
Yeah.
and we've run it into the ground, and we've turned basically the gallery that watching the fights on the South Lawn into the same kind of gallery this was watching the Ryder Cup, which is not true. But we try to balance those people, and it's just not great behavior. And I think I'll just say that. That's one dark chapter that we can hopefully turn away.
From out of, we hope we can move forward beyond that dark chapter. Craig, let's connect this though as a nice segue with Rory moving to London, and part of the reason it says in the article that he remained angry and hurt about Bethpage experience. Well, we're headed right back to Long Island, aren't we? We're go we're go we're going out to the Hamptons. I think it's going to be a little different crowd. I think it's going to be a little different experience, Dr. Bob, because we're headed to a little known place. I'm teasing, of course, Shinnecock, one of the most private, elite, exclusive golf clubs on the planet, that 99.999% of golfers worldwide cannot relate to, cannot go to, cannot afford. Now, I'm not saying anything negative about Rory moving. I'm glad for him and the family. And I understand, by the way. And he's one of my favorite guys playing the game. I think it's great that there's elite private clubs, but so many people can't relate, Craig. Does that help or hurt the game when you're playing at, yes, a historic place like Shinnecock, but so many people cannot relate to that?
Well, it's also on Indian land.
Native American Indian land, okay. Did they buy that from the Native Americans in order to be able to develop it? How did that go? And maybe we let Bob give us a little history here in a minute. But I understand it costs upwards of a quarter of a million. Forget about what your monthly dues are, your food and beverage requirements. So only the wealthiest of people could ever become a member there. And like so many other private clubs, you can't just say, I want to go in the membership office and say, here's my check. You must be invited by numerous current members, not one or two, several, and then go through all the muster passing you've got to go through. Bob, give us a little history on that.
Well, the U.S. government did not buy the land for Shinnecock. It was in 1891. It was a trio of gentlemen by the name of William Vanderbilt, Edward Meade, and Duncan Crider are the names for $2,500. That golf club now has hosted six U.S. Opens. It was the first incorporated golf course in the United States. The Shinnecock Nation did file a lawsuit in 2005, it was, against the New York State and local governments, but the suit was thrown out of court because they waited too long to bring the case.
Do we have any opinion on this, Bob?
Any opinion?
Yeah, do we have an opinion on the court throwing it out, or do we believe the Native Americans should be able to?
The
That
U.S.
happened a
Supreme
lot.
Court,
That
the
happened a
U.S.
lot
Supreme
back then.
Court dismissed the claim, Ray.
Oh, the Supreme Court did it. Okay, I did not know that was the court. Well, then it's over and done. Craig, go ahead.
That happened a lot way back then too.
Right.
So,
Okay.
oh yeah.
Oh, well, that's, I don't know if that's so good. I'm not
There's a
sure if.
lot. There's a lot of northern New York, western New York, northeastern New York, that are being used and effectively by Native American nations, and they've hosted tremendous casinos and resorts.
Yeah.
And I've been up there for a PGA Club Professional Championships, and the Oneida Nation is up there, and they do a wonderful job of organizing it, and it's very successful and good for their the nations that are still have people within the area. But that was one of the dark spots. And isn't it interesting, Ray, that Shinnecock In 1896, his first U.S. Open, John Shippen, at one time, was contending to win the U.S. Open. He was the only, he's the first American club professional, first American born club professional. He is black, and he took an 11 on one of the holes, finished in the top seven or eight, and had that twisted around, we wouldn't be talking about these things right now. It would have been a twist of history. It would have been very unique. But the USGA allowed him to play, even though there was a protest by the British and the Scottish.
Well, the U.S. Open begins today for practice rounds and all of the wonderful happenings and goings on and doings at Shinnecock in Southampton, New York, way out on the end of the island where the mega, mega, mega rich and wealthy live and play. And we'll be attending the US Open. It'll be fun to watch it. It'll be fun to see how it plays out. And I know we have our favorites and what have you. So we're going to end the show on that note as we watch the US Open. And of course, the Golf Channel will be doing every night live from the US Open, where they recap the day and talk about it and analyze it and chew it around. Which sometimes, like a piece of meat, the more you chew it, the bigger it gets. I don't know. That was a joke, everybody. You can laugh. So, Craig, US Open at Shinnecock now. Who wins it?
Oh, golly, I hadn't even given that any thought.
Oh, well, let's go to Bob and then you'll have 30 seconds to give it some thought.
I
Who do
like the
you
way
like?
Matt.
Who do we like? Let's just talk about who do we like.
Okay, I like the way that Matt Fitzpatrick is got his game going, and he's a grinder out there and an excellent putter. I would put him in at least in the top five at this moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other player, Bob, that you are especially going to be watching this week?
Well, I do think that Cam Young, he loves that course as well as some others. He's from New York. He
Yep.
knows the land up there. I think he would be have a shot at it. But you got to realize that the U.S. Open means open. It anybody has a shot because par is your friend.
Well, the USGA has said, and I'm happy about this on the one hand, Craig, and I guess I'm not so happy about it on the other hand, because the US Open is supposed to be the most difficult golf tournament on the earth to win, to play, to survive it. It is a last man standing type event, and there is carnage out there. There is scar tissue created out there, year in and year out, decade in and out. Okay. The USGA has said that while it has been extremely difficult, they've darn near lost the course a few times, especially the greens over the years, that they're going to try to make it more fair. Well, I thought if every single person played the same golf course, it was fair, whether it was difficult or not. Craig, you tell me.
I agree. I still think it'll be seen whether or not they lose it or not. I mean, they've done three, the last three that I remember watching, I think they've lost them. I mean, it depends on the wind, and they have nothing to do with that. So the way that golf course is designed, it may not be their fault, but they may be a little more prepared for it. But it wouldn't surprise me if it gets windy, it's going to get out of control up there.
And then what one or two players do you, which a couple players do you like and you think are going to be right there, maybe?
Well, you know, Dr. Bob said Cam Young and he would be up there.
Yep.
I'd pick, old reliable Scottie Scheffler would be there. And
Old reliable.
Matt Fitzpatrick was very good too. I like all those guys. I mean, they just got to be somewhere on that first leaderboard to do that. And it wouldn't surprise me if all three of those guys are up there.
Well, we know that Matt Fitzpatrick knows how to win a U.S. Open, and there are others. Cam Young is one of my favorites going in. I can't believe that we won't be seeing Scottie Scheffler contending on the last nine, and that he'll be right in the mix, as will others, but it may very well be. And I don't want to sit around like a lot of the news media does and say, well, maybe, and let's see, and we'll find out, and all that silly talk. But as we've said, any player on any given day or week can beat every single buddy else. Just go ask J.J. Spawn, a U.S. Open winner. Right, Craig?
Yep. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this goes.
I'd love to see an unknown win it, or maybe Pot Eater, or what about Ray Tan, Dr. Bob?
Now, one other person I think has a possibility is Wyndham Clark, even though if he stays away from lockers, he'll be fine. But I think he's a grinder. He's a great shot maker. Well, he has runs. He has runs.
And a U.S. Open champion at L.A. Country Club. Wyndham Clark knows how to win a U.S. Open. There are so many great players out there. Who knows who's going to be there? We're not going to try to guess, but what we will do is we'll be back this coming Saturday for Great American Golf, right in the middle of the U.S. Open Championship at Shinnecock. Watch a bunch of golf, practice your short game, Craig says, and so does everybody else. I want to shout out Tina Toombs. Wonderful Tina Toombs, a longtime teacher. Craig, one of your colleagues, award-winning, has landed at and opened up business and is teaching. And anybody can go. You don't have to be a member of Gainey Ranch Golf Club in Scottsdale. Tina Toombs now teaching at Gainey Ranch Golf Club. She's got it all set up. She has the shade there. She's got the measurement systems. And she has her way of working with you if you're a junior, if you're a beginner, if you're a budding tour player, a tour player, a senior adult, and of course, men and women alike. Tina Toombs, we're so glad that Tina is playing or is still teaching and now over at Gainey Ranch. And Greg, you too, again, congrats on your big career milestone.
Thanks,
as
sir.
A 25-year anniversary PGA member. All right, gentlemen, we'll be back with you on Great American Golf. I have just a couple little notes for some of my sponsors. And I want to talk about InnoX1 Golf. Inno Design, and the CEO of Inno Design is Young Kim. He's the founder and the designer of the InnoX1 F1 single rider golf cart. And you know, I look at what InnoX1 has done and the InnoF1, the world's first single rider golf cart. I look at what Mr. Kim has done with his team, a dream that he has had forever in having his own brick and mortar retail place for his single rider golf carts and his other accessories and products that he's invented. As well as the InnoX1 Golf Museum is there. A place to go in and shop, learn, meet Mr. Kim and the staff and the team there in San Juan Capistrano, California. It is now open. He says the gallery was created together with his team at Inno Design, the Palo Alto design company I founded decades ago. And InnoX1, the startup I launched with a dream to create a better golf experience for future generations. He says that for many years, most of my meetings happened in conference rooms with business partners. Now here in San Juan Capistrano, I finally have the opportunity to meet customers directly inside a space I created from my own vision. And that experience feels very special to me. And then he goes on to say, their slogan and what their company's purpose and passion is, we move golf forward. Now that is InnoX1 Golf and the single F1 single rider golf cart. Folks, you've got to go there to the website, find out more about what's going on in the future of golf. You want to go to InnoX1 and find out. I highly recommend it. I also am recommending for you numerous companies that were in my summer golf gift guide. I do have to mention a few of those. I've already talked about squares, and I've talked about Tour Edge Golf. I've talked about CertaFresh Cigar, one of my great longtime sponsors. I've mentioned NOX1, the F1 rider now. Back 9 is a wonderful concept. It is a franchise concept with franchise locations around the country. But the one I'm especially interested in and focused on is right where this show emanates from, here in the North Phoenix area, in a community called Anthem, part of my Anthem only number of businesses that I talk about, promote, advertise for. The Back Nine is open. They're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because you get your own entrance card or key. And they keep the temperature at a wonderful 72 degrees all day and all night, all summer, whenever, wherever. They're right there on Anthem Way in the big Safeway shopping center. Make sure you get to Back Nine up here in North Phoenix in Anthem. And if there's a Back Nine around you, around where you live in the country, check it out for sure. Don't forget Kian Skold, the young man that has created Greenside Essentials, one of the most unique golf towels I've ever seen. But now he has his line of Greenside Essential golf hats. Beautiful. Founded Golf, figolf.com. Founded Golf, figolf.com. The little sticker with a QR code that goes on the end of your grip, helping you find your lost golf clubs. And it's just a wonderful concept. Go to that website, find out about it. The Golf Puck by Aculine. Go to golfpuck.com. You're going to find out so much more. And then, of course, I have to thank my wonderful apparel company. I am so proud and honored to wear Ashworth Golf Apparel. You want to go to Ashworth-Golf Apparel, ashworth-golf.com, and find out all of the new spring and summer apparel. They are beautiful, so playable for the course, and so wearable and fashionable for after golf, wherever you may be at the clubhouse, taking your family to the movies or dinner, roaming around doing whatever you want to do. Folks, if you're wearing Ashworth golf apparel, you're wearing part of golf history. All right, that's it for this show. What a wrap. What a great show. Back with you this Saturday on Great American Golf. And don't forget that sunscreen, and don't forget to hydrate. Please remember that for your great health.
Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many now offering natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. Jack Nicklaus agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Time when you buy and book online at DiscountTire.com. Did you know that Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Stop by for a free air check or tire inspection and ask an associate about wiper blades today. And remember, if ever you're not satisfied with one of our tires, please feel free to bring it back. Thank you. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.